Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight in the Southwest. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a very exciting spotlight to put on the Southwest for our show for this segment. My guest is Dr. Anthony Cortese, and I want to, Tony, if I'm saying it wrong, I love that Italian, like, Tony, it's Tony Cortese. And I had to say that, you know, it's my show, so I get to ham it up a little bit if I want. And Tony is a senior fellow of Second Nature, the Boston-based advocacy organization committed to promoting sustainability through higher education. And I spoke with Tony briefly before we went on air. I would love for him to tell about that, because I would brag to him about him for 15 minutes and then he wouldn't have enough time to talk. But the sentence that I do want to add is that Tony is one of the keynote speakers for the Arizona Higher Education Sustainability Conference being held here on March 24th and 25th and hosted by the University of Arizona. And I, for one, cannot wait to meet Tony in person. So let's start with the founding of this amazing organization called Second Nature and some of your co-founders and what your vision was to change society forever, for all of our sakes.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Green. I really appreciate it. I guess probably the best way to start is to just give you a little history of, you know, how I came to be working in this whole area. I grew up in the inner city of Boston in a working class neighborhood that was mostly about 95% Italian American, right on Boston Harbor. And one of the things that I remember vividly as a kid is that we couldn't go swimming in Boston Harbor after I was about age 8. It's probably a good thing I might not be around today.
That's absolutely
it was so
true.
Polluted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the air pollution was terrible. And when I went to college and I was interested in engineering, I started focusing on why do we have all these pollution problems? Why can't we have progress without pollution? And that got me to study environmental engineering, and I got to work for the original EPA, and then I had the wonderful opportunity to be the director of the Environmental Protection Agency for the state of Massachusetts. And I got to be involved in all of these wonderful programs, right? And this was right around 1970. And the beginning of the whole environmental movement in this country. Of course, my interest and the reason that I went to back to Harvard to get my doctorate in public health was the impact of pollution of the environment on people's health. And I was lucky enough to be involved in all of the initial environmental legislation, the Clean Air Act, the Clean and Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and all of these, and the hazardous waste issues, the Superfund program. And what I couldn't understand is why people kept thinking it was jobs versus the environment.
Right.
Or that it was grow now, worry later. And I discovered it was really interesting to me that no matter what problem we were dealing with when I was, the commissioner of the environmental department, it didn't matter whether we were talking about water supply or air pollution or solid waste issues or protecting the clam flats or protecting the lakes or the oceans. It was always the same. It was grow now, worry later. And so I couldn't figure out why is it, what is the mindset that allows us to think that way. And so I went back to Tufts, where I got my first 2 degrees, to work on how do we transform the education of all students all engineers, scientists, business people, so that they understand how to make and do the things we need in society, but do it in a way that would live in harmony with the life support system. And that's what got me started. And after initially doing that at Tufts for 9 years, I had worked closely with Senator John Kerry and Theresa Hines, with Senator Kerry before he was senator, on acid rain issues in New England. And in fact, we got the first international agreement between the New England states and the five eastern Canadian provinces on how to deal with the acid rain problem. And that was the that was the framework for the Clean Air Act of 1990, which dealt with it on a countrywide basis. And so after I decided to leave Tufts because I wanted to work with other colleges and universities, John and Teresa and I got together and we decided to create Second Nature to help transform the way colleges and universities teach, the way they operate, the way they work with their local communities, with the idea that it would be second nature to create healthy, thriving communities, good jobs, and protect the environment at the same time. And that's why that's how we get started.
So, Tony, I want to ask you this, and this is like, I will promise you that I'll segue back to the topics that I hope we can cover. You have a very long history. I mean, I think back to the 70s, and I remember when the Hudson River was so polluted, there were only dead fish. Yep. They cleaned it up. You know, I'm a Jersey girl. So I remember all that. And it seems to me rather daunting when I hear you speak of your history and your contribution and the contribution of Second Nature and the other think tank, movement possibilities. Is it daunting to you personally, you, Tony, to see where we are now? Because there are days in my journey of Mrs. Green where I don't feel as though we still, you know, the matrix has not been activated. There is, you know, we don't want to go off on Monsanto or the polluted streams or on and on and on. But for you personally, what continues to make you have hope, given the challenges that I'm sure you see every single day? That was a long question, but you know what I'm asking.
No, it's a really important question because it's very easy, you know, to become either cynical or to become, you know, to despair over the current situation.
Right.
And, you know, when I look back over the last 40 years, it's incredible what we've been able to do, you know, to deal with the sort of visible pollution issues.
Right. And that's what you have to look at. Right.
And you have to look at that. And also another thing that's really interesting is when I first started Second Nature, I could tell you on both hands the schools that I could tell you that were really leaders in dealing with these issues, whether it be in the education or research or in the way they were operating or the way they were working with their local communities. And today, I'm very pleased to say I can no longer tell you that because
there are so many colleges, that's great,
communities and universities are doing things. It is unbelievable. In fact, you know, we don't want exponential growth in population or exponential growth in the consumption of resources or the production of pollution and waste, but exponential growth in education and in people engaging. Hundreds of campuses are trying to buy locally grown, organically grown food.
Right, right.
Water
huge
conservation,
shift.
Energy,
yes.
Conservation shifts. It's huge. When I got degrees in environmental engineering, that was quite unusual back in the 60s.
Right.
In the 60s. But now there are environmental degree programs and sustainability degree programs in virtually every discipline: law, engineering, medicine, business, psychology, public health. I mean, it's incredible. So that's all been very good. The challenge is that the growth in population and the growth in consumption is overwhelming all of the good stuff that we've been able to do so far. So back to the question of what gives me hope, the hope I have comes from really the generation that I would say is between 15 and 35. They are thinking very, very differently. And they're working on everything from trying to develop, new business models, new ideas for helping communities be more sustainable in every way. And the innovation and the creativity of this next generation is what gives me hope. And I look at it from the perspective of, the human species has been a very resilient species. And we are in a very tough situation right now that most people don't want to admit. But the fact is that we are resilient. And what gives me hope is that so many people are stepping up to the table and saying, you know what, business as usual is not working for us anymore. It's not making us healthy. It's not making all of us healthy. It's not providing enough jobs for everybody. It's not alleviating poverty. The gap between rich and poor is getting worse. And now we're disrupting the fundamental processes that allow us to live safely on the earth, and that is by disrupting our climate. And so, what gives me hope is that all these people are beginning to come together and say, we've got to do something different.
And the kids, I mean, it is. I could not agree with you more. Anybody under 40 to me is a kid now, but it's when I spend time with the students at the Institute of the Environment here at the university. I mean, that even having an Institute of the Environment with a thought leader like Diana Liverman and, Jonathan Overpeck, they have an integrated thought process. They know it's not just water or solar or our waste or food waste or food scarcity. Diana Liverman is truly a thought leader in saying it's all of those things, and it's a whole integrated process. Now, what about when you...
If we step back for just a minute, because I think this is, you raised a very important point. Society looks at the challenges we have as a separate group of economic,
right,
health, social, environmental, population, political, security issues, as if they're separate and competing, when they're actually systemic and interdependent. And in fact, the structures that we have in society that are creating the environmental problems are creating all the other problems as well.
It's probably the most valid of points that I think any guest on my show could make. It's not out there. It's everything. It's the air we breathe. It's whatever we buy from the grocery store. It's the local restaurant we choose to support. So to me, that's one of the most, it's the tipping point of consciousness that I constantly talk to people about. It's everything. Yes, your water bottle does matter. Your plastic bag does matter, because it's all having an impact somehow. But when you work with colleges and universities and try to, but work with them on institutionalizing sustainability principles and programs in a very robust and growing consciousness, what are some of the common challenges? Because changing institutions is not easy. Shifting the consciousness, getting everybody on board. What are some of the common challenges that you have seen in the years that you've been working with making the shift permanent, making it systemic?
Early on, people thought, well, if we did a little recycling or we did a little energy conservation,
we've got it.
Yeah, we've done the environment. And the essential issue is this, because it goes back to what we were just talking about. See, the mindset that we have, and it's a cultural assumption. The assumption is that humans are separate from the natural world, and that and the earth will be the gift that keeps on giving all the resources that we want
right.
and need and assimilate all of our waste ad infinitum, regardless of the size of the population or our material desires, and that technology will solve all the problems. Well, if that were the case, why do we still have all these structural, huge public health problems, huge problems with 3 billion people in the world making less than $2.50 a day, and the same number of people without sanitation, and a billion people without clean drinking water? The problem is that we have to rethink the idea of sustainability is not about the environment per se. It's about how do we sustain and develop a thriving population that will continue to expand and will have 9 billion people on this planet by 2050. That's a very different question.
It is a very different question.
Many people think sustainability is only about the environment, and it's not. It's about the environment because the Earth provides all the resources which makes living possible. You can go about 3 minutes without breathing, about 3 days without water, and about 3 weeks without food. All the resources which make life possible come from the Earth. And so the notion here is that people have to begin to think that we have an interdependent relationship with the life support system. And we have to keep the life support system in good shape for our own good. See, it's not about protecting the birds and the bees and the trees, which I happen to believe in. But it really is, it's oriented. We have to get people to see that this is about better ways of helping people meet their needs, because we're providing more opportunity by keeping the Earth able to produce all the resources that we need.
And the thing that helps us so much to me in that whole thought process, it's like I call it a world that works for everyone, and I believe that that's possible.
Yeah.
You go
yes,
off into the, like to me, the eye-opening world of filthy fashion. That's what I call it. Because where did that $9 T-shirt you got come from? What children were involved in the making of that T-shirt? Literally, I mean, what slave trade might have been involved in the flowers that you bought at Costco because they're not fair trade sourced? I mean, it is not about being green. It's sustainability to me. And I just, you're singing to this choir. It's like trying to raise the voice of that consciousness. It's everything. So back to university.
Well,
go ahead.
In fact, I would argue that is the only route to the solution, because unless people see that we need to create different and better ways of meeting our needs and some of our wants, then they won't deal with it. They'll always put it off to the future. And when it becomes evident that it's their own self-interest. And that's one of the things that I think we need to do in the whole sustainability movement. And back to the issue of higher education. Higher education used to think of sustainability as something that you did when you had time and you had money to do it.
Right. Right.
When in fact, I would argue, what is the purpose of higher education? I mean, if you look at the social contract that society has with higher education, it is the ability to be nonprofit, to be tax-free, to be able to receive public and private funds, and to in exchange for producing the graduates and the knowledge that will lead to a thriving civil society. So if we are not trying to create a sustainable society, what are we trying to create? So the big shift that I and others have been working on is making sustainability the goal of higher education.
It's almost like the foundation, the underpinning from which all things come. I mean, that's how I feel. It's like that's where you start, folks.
That's exactly right. It's the underpinning. Because, as I said, we don't exist if we don't keep the life support system in good shape. So the thing that was really that, you know, while we had all these wonderful programs we were talking about earlier, all these new degree programs, all of these operational things that the students and others were doing on campuses, energy efficiency, water conservation, all of those kinds of things were terrific. They were necessary but not sufficient. And so finally, in the beginning of the end of 2006, we approached a number of college and university presidents. And one of the first of the dozen leaders that helped us do this was Michael Crow, president of Arizona
right.
State University.
Yep.
And we went to them and said, what about higher education really taking sustainability and the climate issue seriously and making a commitment to do what is scientifically necessary, and that is to become carbon neutral, to help create a low-carbon economy. And a dozen presidents stepped up, and today we have 678 colleges and universities that have made a commitment to become carbon neutral at their own pace, but as rapidly as possible. And
that's huge. Like, if I was a bell ringer, I'd ring the bell. I mean, it's like, I hope people just like press pause for a minute and think of the vastness, the robustness of that statement, because it means there's a shift already happening. And it's that whole thing about let's keep our eye on that positive, because it is daunting. So I had to just press pause for a minute there and say, here we go. Thank you, Tony, and your group of you know, thought leaders, that it's about our very survival. So
it is. And the, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, and by the way, since 2007, when we first started this, the 678 colleges and universities, which, by the way, includes all the big state universities in Arizona. It includes Maricopa County, the largest community college, the
right.
largest community
right.
college, and they all stepped up to the table. Well, during that time period, when the world continued to increase its greenhouse gas emissions, and colleges and universities were expanding like crazy, the schools that are part of this commitment have reduced their greenhouse gas emissions by 25%. And just to put that in perspective, I happen to know the numbers for Arizona State University. Their enrollment went up, about 20% from 2007 to 2010, and their emissions went down 20%.
Unbelievable.
So
I mean, really
yeah.
and truly,
it is. Northern Arizona University, University of Arizona, is doing incredible work, and they're engaging the students, and all three of them will not build any new buildings unless they meet the latest sustainability standards
established by the
United States Green Building Council, the LEED program, the
right.
LEED standard. And it's LEED silver or better. It's not just the bottom floor. It's incredible. University of Arizona recently created its big, I think it's his recreation building.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I mean, unbelievable. Yep.
Yeah,
and it really is. It is so newsworthy. So this is a three part question, and it's to me very, very important. I really want to know what you think when it comes to leadership, and the academics, okay, and academia. What role do you think they should play in terms of impacting public policy and sustainable economic development? This is a perfect segue, because the buildings is one part, but climate change solution and innovation, there's a lot of responsibility in running academic institutions. But is there a bigger role that you see that's really critical for influencing, you know, to me, public policy is huge, And what role do you see that they should be or are playing in terms of impacting public policy, which is huge?
Well, let me just give you, I think you have to think about it in different levels. Northern Arizona University, University of Arizona and Arizona State, which I happen to know a fair amount about them because I've visited all of them and actually have done some consulting work with two out of the three on their sustainability efforts over a number of years. And one of the things that's impressed me is that all three of them are working with the local communities to promote economic and environmentally sustainable development. It is very impressive.
I could not agree with you more. And I'm on the scene. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there are lots of really amazing, wonderful things going on all over the state. In spite of the national news we make about things like SB 1062, we don't need to talk about that.
Right, exactly. I mean, but what's going on the ground level is just incredible. And one of the reasons I'm very happy about coming to this conference is that the schools are working together. And because the challenges we face cannot be solved by any one individual school. Now, many of the schools have groups that are working on public policy issues and are trying to push the national and the state agenda.
Right.
And it's fortunate that they're doing that. As institutional leaders, the presidents, yes, they probably could be doing more, across the country. But, it's very difficult for them to be able to maintain the balance that they have to in order to keep the institutions running and also be public policy advocates. And so what they can do and what many of them are doing is to lead by example. And it's this leading by example, these schools that have signed the president's climate commitment, the schools that are pushing energy efficiency and conservation, the schools that are promoting, renewable energy. Like Arizona State now will have the largest solar array of any college and university in the world.
Yeah, and that just in and of itself, I mean, think of that. Very, very so encouraging.
It's leading by example is the thing that they can do the most. You know, when you think about higher education, here's what society expects of us. First of all, because we produce all of the leaders, all the people that will be the K-12 teachers, all the people that will be the professors, all the people that will go work in business and in government and in every profession, from medicine to law, to nutrition, they expect that we will produce graduates that will allow society to move forward. They also expect us to anticipate the kinds of problems that society will face and to come up with solutions. And they expect us to demonstrate better ways of living, or in my case, we would say sustainable living.
Right, right.
And so that the rest of society can learn from that. They expect partnership with the local communities and with the businesses to help them be more successful, as long as that success means that everybody is going to have a fair shake. So I think the importance of higher education as Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in the world.
Great, and great, so, great one.
Yeah, so colleges and universities actually practicing what we really need in the rest of society is really important.
Literally being the change. Yeah. Tony, we're out of time. It's 30 minutes. That seemed like we have about 30 seconds left. I just want to give a shout out to everybody. Sign up for, come to the Arizona Higher Education Sustainability Conference at the U of A, March 24th and 25th. And Tony, I cannot wait to meet you. Thank you for what you do and Second Nature. And I cannot wait to give you a big Jersey girl hug when I see you in a couple of weeks. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.